You're listening to Away With Words, the show about language and how we use it. I'm Grant Barrett.
And I'm Martha Barnett. What's the difference between the verbs assume and presume? Is there a distinction between ethics and morality? If somebody asked you, could you tell them the difference between an epigram, an aphorism, a maxim, an adage, and a proverb? Well, there's a delightful new book about all of this by Eli Bernstein. It's called, not surprisingly, Dictionary of Fine Distinctions, Nuances, Niceties, and Subtle Shades of Meaning. And it's a light, fun browsing book. It's got whimsical illustrations. And it really makes you think about words like these and to try to sort out for yourself words that are really close in meaning but not quite. Like, for example, in the section about epigrams, he talks about how epigrams are witty, aphorisms are philosophical, maxims are rules of conduct, adages are old and well-known, and proverbs are folk and traditional. And I hadn't really thought about those fine distinctions, but that's exactly what the book is about, and it's a lot of fun. It's a great book to add to your shelf of books about language.
I have another book which I would recommend adding to your shelf of books about language, and this is Says Who by Ann Curzan, who is a professor of linguistics at the University of Michigan and also the dean of the College of Literature and Science and the Arts there. And what this book amounts to, in my opinion, is a summary of a new way to think about language. Well, it's a new way for people outside of linguistics, because inside of linguistics, this is how linguists think about language. She does talk about common questions about usage, where to put the word only in a sentence, for example, but she also talks about language change and why linguists tend to be pretty relaxed about it, whereas the general public tends to be kind of tense about it. There's a part of the book, for example, where she talks about power in language. And Martha, you and I have talked about this before.
She
says, those who have historically enjoyed a lot of social power have had to worry less about consequences, making it seem like freedom of speech is the same as freedom from consequences for getting it wrong. And this is what is so interesting and disruptive about recent movements advocating for more sensitive, inclusive language. She talks, you know, of course, about pronouns. She talks more about how the language of minority groups, be they gender-based minority groups or racially-based minority groups, have an impact on the larger language. But she breaks down these worries that we have about language and explains them in a practical, realistic, fact-based way so that anyone can understand. So this is a book by a great linguist, I've known her for decades, for anyone, not for other linguists. And I would highly recommend this. It's called Says Who, A Kinder, Funner Usage Guide for Everyone Who Cares About Words. And it's by Anne, A-N-N-E, Curzan, C-U-R-Z-A-N.
What a great title. I love that she added funner to the title.
And your book, Martha?
My book is Dictionary of Fine Distinctions, Nuances, Niceties, and Subtle Shades of Meaning by Eli Bernstein.
We'll link to them both from our website, of course. Martha and I are always interested to know what you're reading and what you would recommend to everyone else who listens to our show. Let us know, 877-929-9673. Email words at waywardradio.org. And we are all over social media. You can find all of our handles and nicknames on our website at waywardradio.org.
Hey there, you have Away With Words.
Hello, Away With Words. I am Mike from Glasgow, Kentucky.
Glasgow, Kentucky. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
And thank you.
What can we do for you?
I have been curious for a number of years about a phrase that I heard more than once on some British comedies, Are You Being Served? And Last of the Summer Wine. And I've been a longtime fan of British comedies. And the phrase I have heard on the show, which sparked my curiosity, is, I go to the foot of our stairs.
And in what context would you hear this?
The context was always seemingly someone who had just been told something that was shocking, surprising, or amazing.
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of weird catchphrases that don't make any sense out of context, but they feel right. It probably sounded right in the middle of the show, though, right? It sounded
well, sure.
Yeah, in the middle of the show, it's like, all right, that sounds like an expression of surprise. I can understand that, but out of context, you're like, why would they say, "I'll go to the foot of our stairs"? This doesn't make any sense.
Well,
how is that a thing?
The questions that I always asked myself are, one, what is there? What's at the foot of the stairs?
Uh-huh.
And number two, what do you do when you get there? Why
uh-huh.
do you go there?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's my curiosity.
All right. Let's break this down. I think I've got some ideas and some answers for you. There are a couple reference books that help with this. There's one called The Oxford Dictionary of Catchphrases by Anna Farkas. That's F-A-R-K-A-S that has an entry on this. But also the catchphrase and quote expert Nigel Reese, that's R-E-E-S. He's got it's more or less the same entry in a bunch of his different books on quotes and catchphrases that mentions this. And they both point to a BBC comedy radio series called It's That Man Again, often abbreviated as ITMA, that ran from 1939 to 1949. You can find some episodes online if you want to hear it. It doesn't age very well. But this show was known for its catchphrases. It was one of the main things they did with the characters. They had like a zillion characters on it. Every character had a catchphrase. And one of the characters had this, or a version of it, as its catchphrase. Well, I'll go to the foot of the stairs. And you'll often find it in the years since, in the decades since, modified. I'll go to the foot of my stairs, of your stairs, of our stairs, to the bottom of the stairs, or even to the back of our house. And generally, this show, which featured comedian Tommy Hanley from Liverpool, is credited with popularizing the phrase, but not originating it. And that's the important part. Apparently it existed. But if you think about things, have you ever heard expressions like, well, good night?
Of course.
Okay. This is what this is doing. When you go to the foot of the stairs, what you're doing is about to ascend those stairs and go to your room and go to bed.
I see.
So what you're saying is that I'm done with this nonsense or this surprise or this has so befuddled me that I have to withdraw from polite company and go to sleep and sleep this off. That's basically what you're saying. I have to sleep this off. This is just too much for me. I'm overwhelmed.
I have asked some English friends in the past what they had to share about the phrase. One explanation I received was that the person who says the phrase had just been shocked or amazed at something.
Yes.
And you ask yourself, what is at the foot of the stairs? And in Yorkshire, very commonly in old times, you found the privy. And I was explained that somebody was so shocked, so amazed at something that they were just told that they would probably have to go out in the back garden because they had just soiled themselves or needed to use the...
Yes. I see, yes.
Or they needed to think about it.
Well, I found that intriguing and the most plausible explanation.
I think that does go hand in hand with my explanation, though, that they are so overwhelmed by whatever... They're claiming to be so overwhelmed by what has been said or what has happened.
Right.
That
they
are forced by circumstances to do something that the body requires.
Yes, yes. And I accept your explanation being in line with what I expected.
Mike, take care of yourself. Thank you for sharing your question. And I appreciate all the time you put into researching it and bringing it to us.
It has been a pleasure and a thrill.
All right. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Go to the foot of the stairs and call us, 877-929-9673. Hello, you have a way with words.
Hi, my name's Jason. I'm calling from Central Florida. I was wondering if you could help me figure out how prevalent a particular turn of phrase is that I have heard many times in my life. Growing up in Florida and around a lot of older folks who have a little bit more of the Florida Southern accent, I often hear them say, liked to never. So they use it in a way that kind of means almost did not. So an example might be, it started raining yesterday and it liked to never stop.
Which is not unusual for Florida.
That's right.
And this is something you've heard your whole life throughout Florida or just in Central Florida?
I've only lived in Central Florida, but I have heard it my entire life from various people that I've spoken with, mostly my family members, especially maybe older members of my family who have a little bit more of a Southern accent than I do.
Okay. If you had traveled to Northern Florida or gone even further throughout the American South, into Georgia and Alabama or into the Carolinas or Kentucky and Tennessee and perhaps even further, you would have heard it also. Definitely in Appalachia, Arkansas and Missouri as well, maybe even into Texas and even in sometimes in outside of the South and parts of the rural North, because this is an expression that has been established in the United States since the 1700s.
Wow.
Not always in the negative sense with the never, but sometimes in the positive sense, like I'd like to. It written, it sometimes looks like L-I-K-E-T-A, like I like to fall over when he pushed me from behind. and it's directly related to likely, like something is likely to happen. Like I'm likely to never paint my head purple, you know. I'm likely to never grow wings, just to come up with some ridiculous examples. And these are something that we get from British dialect uses. So where it's the most common in the United States is where people from certain regions of the United Kingdom settled in the United States. So that's why it's sprinkled mostly and most thoroughly throughout the U.S. South. I'm a little surprised to hear that it's common in Central Florida, but not all that surprised, because there's somewhere between the Florida panhandle and the very southern tip of Florida, the dialect map starts to shift. You know, it goes from the very classic Southern American English to something else, maybe more of the, you know, there's a lot of overlay of the snowbird accents from people who've come down from the Northeast and, of course, all the Latin American layers and language.
They say of Florida that the farther north you go, the farther south you get, which I think makes a lot of sense.
That's exactly it. That's what I was going for. That's exactly it. That's exactly it. But yeah, so this is something like, just as you said, you're saying almost or nearly. And originally, if you'd written it out back in the day, centuries ago, it might have looked like liked to. I had liked to, L-I-K-E-D space T-O, or like to, L-I-K-E space T-O, as two separate words. But often these days, it looks like one word or sounds like one word.
That's very interesting. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Call us again sometime, Jason.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. You take care of yourself.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Like Jason, if you've heard a word or phrase that's tickled your ear and you're curious about it, let us know. 877-929-9673.
Hello, you have a way with words.
This is Ollie. I'm calling from Virginia. Listen to you guys all the time. Very excited to join in.
Well, we are pleased to punch to have you on the show.
Thank you. When I was growing up, I had a friend, and this was late high school, early college, which was back in the late 60s, early 70s. And they used a phrase that I have never heard anyone else say before. No one in their family, no one in my family, grew up in the same town, same surroundings. The phrase means something similar to rode hard and put up wet. And it would she would use it to describe, for instance, if you've been out playing tennis and it's a very hot day and you're tired and you're sweaty and you're grimy and you're just exhausted. And you looked it, she would look at you and say, "You look like death eating on a nab." And that's never made any sense to me whatsoever. The only time I've ever heard the word nab used is we used to refer to the little toasty crackers, the little crackers with the peanut butter in them made by Lance and Tom's. We call those nabs. And that, I believe, was after the Nabisco company that actually made the first little cracker ones. But mm-hmm. Death Eating on a Nab, I've never heard before. And I listen to your show all the time, and I thought I would call and see what you thought.
So that's Nab, N-A-B, right?
N-A-B as in boy.
Yeah, those little square snack crackers that usually come in a six-pack. And you say Nab, and I just hear the thud of one of them in a vending machine. That's how I used to get
there you go.
Them back
that's right.
In the day.
It used to be a nickel. Now they're $3 or something.
Oh,
you know?
Right.
Yeah, same thing.
Right. And a lot of them are sort of a fluorescent orange with a little bit of peanut butter on the inside.
Exactly. Very, very healthy. Yes.
Yes,
that's
yes.
them.
Really good for you. It's,
by,
it's
one by some great definitions
for you. Yes.
Of healthy.
Yes.
Very interesting. Have you ever heard the expression, you look like death eating on a cracker?
Never.
Okay.
But I could see how that would relate. But no, I've never heard that.
Yeah, yeah, that's the much more common one. And maybe your friend was just being creative and individual. But yeah, the expression, you look like death eating on a cracker, is just this humorous elaboration of saying you look terrible, saying you look, you know, you could just say you look like death. But to make it fun and colorful,
right.
We say things like you look like death warmed over. Or you look like death on toast, or you look like death eating a cookie. Or back in the 40s, Ralph Ellison, in his book Invisible Man, used the phrase like death eating a sandwich. You know, because if you're talking about death, this sort of softens it, right?
Well, I guess you eat enough nabs, you know, you're going to be headed that way pretty soon. So
yeah, maybe that that's orange glow of hell's fires do make you look like death.
That's right. And the stuff all between your teeth and everything, you know, it's just great. Yeah.
Well, Ollie, thank you so much for your call. We really appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Great talking
you
with you.
See you.
Okay.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, wash that cracker out of your mouth and give us a call, 877-929-9673. That's toll-free in the United States and all of Canada. And if you're somewhere else in the world, you can reach us on WhatsApp. That number's on our website at waywardradio.org.
Our team includes senior producer Stephanie Levine, engineer and editor Tim Felton, and quiz guy John Chinesky.
We'd love to hear from you, no matter where you are in the world. Go to waywardradio.org/contact.
Subscribe to the podcast, hear hundreds of past episodes, and get the newsletter at waywardradio.org.
Whenever you have a language story or question, our toll-free line is open in the U.S. and Canada, 1-877-929-9673. Or send your thoughts to words@waywardradio.org.
Away with Words is an independent production of Wayward Inc., a nonprofit supported by listeners and organizations who are changing the way the world talks about language.
Special thanks to Michael Breslauer, Josh Eccles, Claire Grotting, Bruce Rogo, Rick Seidenworm, and Betty Willis.
Thanks for listening. I'm Martha Barnett.
And I'm Grant Barrett. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.